Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here with us today. Always appreciate your attention. A really interesting and I consider a special show today. We're going to be talking about students and anti-gun violence. A student who went to the March for Our Lives rally was held back on March 24th up in Washington, D.C. She also participated in her school's walkout, I believe. Is that correct? Am I misspeaking?
No, that is 100% correct.
Althea Lawn Worrell, junior at Charlottesville High School. We also have Cynthia Neff in the studio with us today. Good morning, Cynthia.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Cynthia is a professional volunteer and activist. Professional volunteer and activist.
Well, yeah, everybody asks what you do, and once you retire from your day job, you have to kind of make up a title. And I thought, professional volunteer. I'm on 5 boards, so that was my title.
Volunteer and activist, including organizations such as Jefferson Area Board for Aging and Legal Aid Justice Center, both organizations who've been here at Sunday Morning Wake Up Call in the past. So thanks to the both of you for being here with us today. So, Althea, we're going to be talking about students and anti-gun violence and some of the rallies and issues along with this topic. But I think it seems to have come to the forefront with the students of your age and your generation because of what happened in Parkland, Florida, back on February 14th.
Yeah. And I think part of that is that it is an affluent high school with a majority of white students who haven't allowed the subject to die back in the news cycle. And they've said that this is an awful thing because it is, but they've also forced us to have conversations about this, but they've also inspired students like me and a bunch of others who I go to school with to actually do something and to go and organize and be a part of it. And yeah, this is a discussion again, because it was a mass shooting in an affluent white area in high school with kids, with children. And it amazes me that we've had to have over, what is it, at least like over 100 mass shootings within since Sandy Hook? Or is that just in the last couple of years?
Well, you realize that there's one or two or three or four that make the news because of the size.
Exactly.
But you don't hear about the dozens that don't make the news because there's only one or two. Right. Because
exactly.
It wasn't interesting enough, or because it only made its local news, not because we heard about it in Virginia and because it took place in Washington or Montana and because somebody walked into the school and only got caught with their gun or shot somebody who didn't die.
Exactly.
Because the numbers didn't bring enough attention.
Exactly. There was a kid at Charlottesville High School who brought a gun into school, and the only reason we knew about it was because he got caught in the hallways without a yellow pass saying he could go anywhere. That's the only reason we found it. That's the only reason the students even know about it. And it didn't make any news. Nobody really knew about it. They just robocalled all of our parents, and they sent out a message and an email saying, oh, your children are safe. A child brought a weapon into school. But we didn't really know about it. And that's an issue. And so I feel like if this was nationally reported. If we reported every time there was a mass shooting, which is a shooting that involved three or more people, then that would be the only news that we had. Because people are able to obtain guns so easily at such a young age with barely any knowledge of what a gun does or how to work it or how to use it.
So what happens on February 14th? You hear about you hear about Parkland. Does that become news to you and your friends immediately? Does it take the day? Or I'm curious as to how long before you become fired up.
Well, once it hit national news, we were all like, oh my gosh, this is so sad. Oh my goodness, these poor students. Oh my God, what can we do? Should we send them something? And then once the students actually got up there and started talking about it and actually started demanding change, that's when we were like, oh my gosh, we should go do this. We should go be with them. We should go do what they are trying to do. We should go try and make these changes. And I, out of a group of my friends, only a couple of us will get involved in activist-y things, so to speak. And I didn't really start joining anything until this year, honestly, when I started to realize the importance of student activism. And so it took until there were students who were calling on students, kids just like me and younger, to go and march and talk to our representatives and to call and to demand change.
Again, our guest today, Althea Lawn Worrell. She's a junior at Charlottesville High School. She participated in multiple activist issues, including going up to D.C. for the March for Our Lives rally several weeks ago. We also have Cynthia Neff here with us, who will be participating in the conversation in a short time. Althea, what were some of your memories of February 14th? You talk about you and some of your friends saying to each other, oh, we need to support them. We need to, you know, they're talking about what needs to happen next, and, you know, we need to agree with them and help them with this. Mm-hmm. But I'm asking a question about emotions.
Mm-hmm.
What were you feeling?
I remember I was at my Aunt Charlotte's house. I was hanging out with her. She had just moved into her house, and so we were just cleaning stuff up, putting boxes away, doing all that kind of stuff, and she had the news on. And so they were talking about what happened in Parkland. I was like, what? What happened in Parkland? Because I didn't know Parkland existed. I knew Florida existed, but I didn't know the school itself existed. And then they started showing this video of some kid took it on their phone and gunshots, and they said 17 dead in Parkland, Florida. And I remember feeling the same shock and sadness and being afraid that what if that was us? What if that happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, because some kid got upset about something or mad and decided that they wanted to take that out on the students of Charlottesville High School? What if that happened at work? What if that happened anywhere? And so I know the chances of that are pretty slim, but the fact that it could happen, that is what terrified me the most. What scared me was, I know that once these shootings become so public and everybody knows about that, the chances of it happening again are higher. And so I kind of felt myself stop breathing, and everything got really quiet. Even my aunt's three dogs, who are weird and crazy, they all got quiet, and we all just sat and we watched. And I have to say, it was one of the worst Valentine's days I've ever experienced, because it was so heartbreaking and shocking. And I remember feeling that same way after Pulse and Sandy Hook. And it was scary going back to school, because it made me think, what if some kid decides that they want to be like this kid at Parkland?
So what happens at school the next day?
Everybody was sad. They were shocked. My teachers were, I felt like everybody was a bit on edge after. Everybody was like, okay, this happened last night. This happened yesterday, not last night. And I felt like, I remember sitting in my math class and my teacher saying to us, I am so sorry. If you need people to talk to, you can go to the guidance counselors. And everybody just feeling so, just everything was a lot quieter. There weren't people running around, laughing, being quite as happy or carefree as you can be in a high school. It was, after every single one of these, it's awful. And you look at the kids in your classes, and sometimes you'll make eye contact with them and you will just give each other this look that's like, this is, oh my gosh. And there really aren't words to describe how you really, really feel. You just feel this empty sadness and this fear.
Do you remember when plans started coming around for the March 14th? I don't know what to call it. Was it a memory?
It was a walkout. Yeah, it took a lot of different schools took it different ways. Our school, we did. We had 17 students with the names of, not 17 students, but the names of the people. We had 17 people, and we had their names, and we called out their names, and we talked about a call to action during the walkout when we were all out on our upper baseball field. And, sorry, can you say the question again?
About how long it took to get planned, how the students went about it.
Once it got around, like on social media, really, was when people were like, oh, there's a walkout. We should do a walkout. And so I know Frey Haversham Taylor, Zion O'Brien, Mia, and one other girl who goes to my school, the four of them really came together for it. And so it was out online a lot. Like, social media is one of the biggest ways that a lot of us get our news and become informed about different activist things that we can do and that are being planned, and that we can sign up for and we can register our school for, so that they, one, have the numbers, but also so that it's more official.
Did the school give you a hard time? Did the school allow it without problem?
They allowed it without really any problem, as far as I know. I wasn't one of the bigger planners, so I can really only give you what the impressions that I got and what I had been kind of told by different people who were helping out with it. But they went to their principal and talked to him about it. And they said, Dr. I, we want to do this. We don't want you guys to stop us or make this hard on us, because we feel like this is an important thing that we can do. And Dr. Azari was very understanding. He was like, I understand that you guys have a voice and that you have every right to voice that. So we didn't really have any problems. There were extra police presences at our school just in case something happened or somebody got a stupid idea to come and threaten us, which didn't happen, thankfully. But the school was very understanding, and they knew that we wanted to voice this and that they could either stand in our way or they could allow it to happen. And they had allowed it. Nobody got in trouble for it. And so that's one of the reasons why it worked out so well and why it wasn't this whole big thing where this school didn't allow their students to walk out. It was they supported us and they understood us.
Again, Sunday morning wake-up call here today as we talk about students and anti-gun violence. Althea Lawn Worrell here with us today, a junior at Charlottesville High School, who also participated in the March for Our Lives rally. We also have Cynthia Neff here, who was one of the planners, the adult planners, for the bus that went up to D.C. for the March for Our Lives rally. Althea, have you had an intruder drill since the Parkland shootings?
Yes, we've had, so we have different drills that we do. We have lock-in drills where it depends on the kind. Some of them is where there's one kind where we lock our doors and our teachers just keep teaching, but our doors are locked in case there is an intruder. And then we have another one where they go on the intercom and they tell us that this is a lockdown drill, and the school knows what kind, but we had one where we stayed in our seats and we kept learning. And I believe part of that was because they were bringing in drug dogs, but they still bring in drug dogs, even though it's slightly ridiculous. But as far as I can remember, that was about it. We had a one where we had to turn off all of our lights and get away from a window and kind of get in the corner, lock our doors, and just all be very, very quiet. We had one of those, I believe, before then. But, yeah, before. It was before. So we don't do a lot of them. We know what happens during them, but we don't do a lot. So it's hard to remember exact spacing. But we did have one where we stayed in our seats. I do remember that one after the Parkland shooting.
I'm just curious. Let me bring Cynthia Neff into the conversation. Cynthia, who is a volunteer and local activist, and who participated in the bus drive up to Washington, D.C., and we'll talk a little bit more about that as the hour goes along. But Cynthia, not to bring your age or my age into the conversation, except to say that we both come along before there were intruder drills.
Yes, but the age thing is important. I know that after the march, the next day, I said to one of the kids, I said, "Boy, you must be tired." And they went, "No, I'm exhilarated. How could I be tired?" And I went, "Oh, that must be the 50-year age difference between me and them." But you know, it's the world is a lot different. I mean, but you know, I remember looking back on Sandy Hook. And just like Althea says, you know, that gut-wrenching weight on your soul when you find out what happened to it. I mean, it still makes me tear up a bit to think about all these kids, you know, getting killed like that. And you think, oh, my God, that'll never happen again because this is just so horrific. And I realized that I've become like everybody else and think, oh, my God, there's, you know, we can never do anything about guns. The guns are just so regimented into our system of belief. And it was these kids who've given me hope again.
Right. You look at Sandy Hook and you say, that's going to be the one that does it because they're elementary school children.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many of them.
Right.
There were.
And then you look at what happened in Las Vegas and you say, that's going to be the one because of the excessive amount of people.
Yeah.
And nothing happens.
Nothing.
And so now we say, maybe it's Parkland because it will fire up this generation to run everybody out who's doing nothing and bring in people who will do something. It's time to take our first break, and we'll come back and we'll continue the conversation with Althea Lawn Worrell, junior at Charlottesville High School, and Cynthia Neff. Hang tight, please. Fascinating talk. Okay, back here at Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, talking about students and anti-gun violence. Althea Lawn Worrell here with us today, representing all the students. Do you feel the pressure? Do you feel the power?
No, because I'm not representing all students.
That's a great question. Go ahead.
Like, I'm representing what I believe in and what I want to say, but I'm not representing all students, because I know that what I've said in the past 20 minutes, some students might not agree with it.
That's something I want to bring up. Is you talk about when you went back to school the day after Parkland and how quiet it was, and how some of the teachers said, if you need to talk, you can go over here and talk to these folks. But you would think that there are some students who either, weren't paying attention, aren't bothered by it, or who are just not of the mindset yet where it matters to them.
Yeah, and so everybody's experience after and during school is different. That was just how I felt and how I experienced the day after the shooting. But I don't represent all students. And I couldn't say that if I had any of my friends in here, I don't know if all of them would agree with me. And so I represent a few ideas, and I hope that the majority of what I've said people agree with, because everybody wants to be agreed with. But when it comes down to it, I'm just saying what I believe in and hoping that other people believe the same thing and understand what I'm trying to say.
Well, and on March 24th, her opinion was, replicated by hundreds of thousands of people. It was a very powerful message that came across on the march.
It was. But there was one kid who said, we should arm our teachers. And that's when I was like, oh, I don't agree with that. Oh, okay.
Well, certainly something that was brought up by a number of people, current presidential administration, as well as, and not just the presidential administration with that idea.
We had a number of teachers with us, and the teachers were pretty clear, and the students. I overheard some healthy conversations, as amongst all those people about how the and signs. And one of the great things about going to the march was seeing all the signs.
The signs were great. Was
carrying, and there were, the view that teachers should not be armed and should not, trade their school books in for a weapon was loudly represented.
What about a teacher didn't have a problem with it? I mean, it's one thing if you have 100 teachers and you say, every teacher has to have a gun. Or what if you have 100 teachers and you say, any one of you who wants to have a gun, we'd love you to have a gun and be another piece of security.
If a teacher feels like they should be armed, then okay. But it is also about how the students feel and if they feel actually protected. Because I know if I walked in to any number of my classes and my teacher had a gun, I would be scared to be in that class every single day. Because nobody knows what could happen. And that's a big question. What if? What if this? What if that? And so I personally wouldn't feel safe. I don't know if there are other students out there who would feel safer if their teachers were armed. But personally, that just feels like you're adding another problem. How do we regulate the teachers? And it goes state by state. Different states have different requirements for who should have a gun, who shouldn't, permit-wise, like what kind of training would those teachers go through? And there are different levels to it. But teachers, personally, I believe teachers shouldn't have guns. They should be there to teach us. They shouldn't be there to have to protect us. Arming teachers, personally, shouldn't be the answer. It like, honestly, for me, it is the scarier option.
I would agree. I mean, I think that one of the things that I know in a couple of the kids that I've talked to that they've said, which is a sentiment that I agree with, guns don't reassure me. Guns don't make me feel better. Guns make me nervous. And so, you know, what about people like me who, you know, have a negative association with guns? I think putting them into the school, you know, just creates an atmosphere that is, you know, not going to be helpful to children trying to learn.
Exactly. And I feel the same way about metal detectors. You know, well, one, there's a line to get into school. That's the more frivolous idea. But it's also, it's creating the a prison-like atmosphere. And it enforces the school-to-prison pipeline. Because if we're being treated like prisoners, then we act like prisoners. If our teachers are armed, that is representative of an armed guard. In our school, our open areas are surrounded by two walkways, and in which teachers walk back and forth, and they watch us to make sure that everything is okay. We already have two police officers at our school. I remember when I could go to school and there was no police officer. And I felt perfectly safe and perfectly fine back then. And
now you sound as old as Cynthia and I.
I know. And the thing is that I'm not even that old. I'm only 17 years old. And I still can say, well, it was different back when I was in elementary school. And the fact that I can say that is absolutely ridiculous. Honestly.
Well, especially since it all happened since those, you know, life-changing moments at Sandy Hook and Pulse and all of the, you know, tens of thousands of children who've died, that we're still having this conversation, and that people actually think that the answer is to spread more guns out there and create more of a you know, an army.
Exactly.
In schools.
That is not a healthy, I don't really understand how I can express this, because I would feel scared, more scared. I would be more scared if my teacher had a gun than the chance of some random student having one. You know, like, what do the teachers do when they go home? You know, do they leave their gun at school? Who has keys to access these guns? You know, so if we're going to arm every teacher, who's going to provide those guns? All right. And what happens when those teachers go home? Do they take those guns with them? And do they endanger their children when they have them at home? Or do they leave them at school where a student could possibly get into them? And there are different safes that people can have that can be accessed with a fingerprint or an eyeball scan. I don't know if I've actually seen that, more on TV than anything. But it, like, regulating those, how is putting more guns out there into the system where people can have access to them the answer? Because the best way to stop people is to take it away. You know, if a kid's hitting another kid with a baseball bat, the answer isn't to hand that other kid a baseball bat and say, there you go, protect yourself. It's to take the baseball bat from the kid who's hitting this other kid. You know, like, this seems very personally clear to me.
That's pretty logical.
Thank you. Thank you. And a lot of people will say, well, that's apples and oranges. Well, it isn't. If you think about it, this is one person attacking another. Which makes more sense? Taking away what they're attacking that person with? Or hand them the same thing and say, protect yourself? And there's the answer of, well, they could always use something else. They'll always find something else. And a lot of people get very like, whoa, Althea, that's a little too far that you're going there. But I would much rather have somebody try and bring a knife to school than bring a gun. Because they're more likely to kill me if they have a gun than a knife. You have to be pretty dang close to me sorry, almost cursed there, to actually hurt me with a knife, you know? And just, if you're asking me my preference, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our guest today.
I'm with you, kid.
Our guest, Althea Lawn Worrell from Charlottesville High School, and Cynthia Neff, a local volunteer and activist who helped put together the March for Our Lives bus up to Washington, D.C. and out of Charlottesville about 31 minutes after the hour with our guests here today on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. So let's talk about the bus trip and what happened in D.C. For a little bit. So,
well, it was interesting how it even started. Was I had worked on putting together a bunch of buses a year ago for the Women's March on Washington, and we had 8 buses and that I'd organized, and we took up there. Mm-hmm. And I got an email kind of forwarded to me from somebody, you know, who didn't know me to who didn't know me, but knew who somebody who did, and you know, about 4 or 5, and it was basically, there's some students at CHS that want to participate in the march on Washington on the 24th, which was only a few weeks away. And, you know, you seem to know how to do this. Can you help them? And so so we very kind of quickly put it together. But it was always very interesting. You know, on the Women's March, I was in charge. You know, I mean, I was in charge. And that was just how, you know, we did it. And it was like, even though I was kind of I was the administrator of everything, it was really...
For the student bus ride.
It was really... We had 4 buses that we took students. It was fundamentally students, teachers, and a few parents, and a couple volunteers. Mm-hmm. And it was, first of all, I was really nervous because I thought, you know, I had to be a little mean to get, you know, 426 women to show up on time and do everything I said for the day. Because it's a long day to go up there. You know, you leave in the dark, get home in the dark. And I thought, oh, my God, how am I ever going to get all these high school kids to show up? And I want to say I told them, you better be there at 7. And I didn't even threaten to leave without them. And everybody was there at about 6:55. And it was very helpful. We had food delivered. A lot of volunteers had put food together. And so we were all running around with stuff.
Trying to, like, pass everything out, make sure everybody had food.
Spread it among the 4 mm-hmm. buses.
And this wasn't just Charlottesville high school kids.
Oh, no. There were kids from Monticello, Western, Albemarle.
Goochland, we had a couple kids.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
So, I mean, if you...
Tandem.
There's an article. Yeah, if you go back and... at least a province here last week from Seville Weekly. There's an article in the Seville Weekly about the bus ride, and they mention, there's a bunch of names mentioned and talking about the trip. It's a wonderful article. But yes, all the different high schools that went up, and it sounds like a really great day, but it talks about, it makes it sound like it was a long day, fun or not. Exhilarating or not.
So for one thing, one of the things that, you know, now that I am the bus expert, my new career, when I'm tired of this, is that you have to figure out where to park the silly things. They're too big to pull into parking lots.
Oh, yeah.
So what Washington, D.C. does is they said, look, here's RFK Stadium. You guys will love it. There's plenty of room. And it literally becomes a sea of buses. I mean, everybody thought it was pretty silly that I had these orange balloons.
Oh, no. Those orange balloons were very helpful, you know, because you could identify which bus you had.
When you walk into RFK and you literally come over this hill and you go, oh, no, because it is a sea, hundreds and hundreds of white buses.
That and school buses. There were school groups there, which was amazing.
Yeah, so these little orange balloons you could see, and it's like, oh, those 4 are our buses. So, but it was a really long day, and you basically walk. It's a 2.6-mile walk that directly to get from, you know, where our bus was. But plus, you know, many of the roads were blocked because mm-hmm. that's what they do. So everybody walked miles further.
Oh, yeah. It was far enough that I was able to put it in on my virtual gym form and said, here's my exercise.
Yeah.
Here's my activism.
Most people
didn't tell you how your pedometer tell you how many steps you took for the day.
My phone told me how many steps I took for the day.
Yeah.
I was like, this many plus.
It was a long day, but you know, we came back to the buses exhausted, but exhilarated. And we had a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that a bunch of elementary school kids had put together for us from Families in Action, and some turkey sandwiches, and it was, and it tasted delicious.
Sweet House, we had those
Sweet House cupcakes. Sweet House donated some cupcakes. Bodo's gave us bagels, and in fact, we ended up making a huge contribution at the end to the Haven. We had so much food delivered that we had to go deliver it ourselves to somebody else. But
yeah,
but it was really, I think, the thing that I will remember forever is standing. I mean, it, a sea of humanity. You know, you stand there and you look out and you see these jumbotrons, and it's all kids. I mean, there's no adult in charge. There's not, it's, and you keep hearing the same message over and over and over that there is no gun that's worth killing even one child. You know, it's time to change. We can do it. We can do it. We don't need to have, you know, automatic weapons or semi-automatic weapons. We need to be able to register people for guns. You know, we don't need the magazines that hold so much ammunition. And I'll tell you, I ran into Tim Kaine the day after we got back. And first thing I did was tell him, you know, I went to the march. Did you participate? He did. He was in Richmond with, and he was talking about the kids that he talked to, and I was talking about the kids. And let me tell you what, it got to him. And he said all night he asked me, what did I think? Because all night he'd been thinking about the magazine question. Is it really, you know, do you focus on semi-automatic weapons, or do you focus on the magazine and the amount of ammunition they hold? He goes, and I'm thinking about that. What do you think? And he was asking other people around there. So I felt, you know, somewhat vindicated, you know, that just, you know, a day later, everybody's, you know, feeling this pressure to do something. You know, it's because of people like Althea.
Well, and it's also because of help that we do get from adults whose opinion some people value more than a student's. And so it's always helpful when adults are able to give you that platform. You know, and sometimes you do have to go and say, I need to say this, I'm saying this, this is what's happening. But it's always amazing when adults are always there willing to help and help us get our message out. So thank you for that.
Well, so that's a great follow-up to the next question, which is, how do you become treated as an adult? It's an important topic. You've done something. The students have brought this to the forefront since Parkland, through conversation, through news. You've had some of the Parkland students have had have been across from the president, certainly on all the news, on CNN and everywhere else. And here we are asking people who can't vote to ask people who depend on votes to pay attention to what they're saying.
That is that's a pretty tricky question, because the way personally that I found the easiest way to go about it is to stand strong, to be factual, to be armed with information. And so it also helps to be able to try and find adults who are of the same mind, who have a similar message, and say, hi, I'm a student. And so it's harder for me to be respected in certain movements because you're just a kid. You don't know any better. And so it's really about information and finding adult who will listen to you, and then learning from them and going to those who might not respect you and might not understand why you are trying to have a voice. And from them, you can... sorry, that kind of went all over the place. But the point is to find people who are of the same mind, one. It's easier to get something done. It's easier to say what you mean. It's easier to get your message out there if you have more people. And part of that is going to talking to other students, but also then trying to find those adults who you're able to say, hi, this is how I feel. I want to do something about this. I want to get more involved. And talking to them and saying, getting advice, one, and also getting help as to how to introduce your ideas to other people and how to get those things done. Because they've learned from their experience, and there's a lot that I think student activists can learn from from older activists, because they have things that they have important information to share with you. And it's also about having a strong message and staying strong. No matter how many people criticize you for being young, it's about staying strong. That doesn't mean, and I've definitely been at fault for this, being aggressive about it because you're trying to push your message. But it's staying respectfully strong. And that's kind of a weird medium, because it's knowing what your opinion is, having information, having facts, being able to say, look at these different instances, look at these numbers, being able to share articles, podcasts, that kind of thing with people and say, I'm not the only one. And just because I'm young doesn't mean that you don't have to listen to me. And that's the same message you have to send when you talk to politicians and when you talk to your representatives. And some of them don't really listen to the younger voices. And I don't think they're very smart for that, because we are the next voters. We are who is either going to keep you in office or keep you out of office. And so that having that kind of understanding allows students to have the voice that they so rightly deserve.
All right. Althea Lawn Worrell, Jr. at Charlottesville High School. I love that. Cynthia Neff. Also here with us today. Take this break. Be right back. All right. Back in action with our guests today, Althea Lawn Worrell and Cynthia Neff, as we talk about students and anti-gun violence. We're also talking about the March for Our Lives rally that was March 24th. Althea, we were talking about being treated as an adult, or having people who are dependent on votes pay attention to people who can't yet vote. Mm-hmm. Are you registered? Did you get registered? Did you notice registrations taking place up in D.C.?
There were people walking around in D.C. saying, hi, are you 18? Are you registered to vote? And going around and registering people at the march saying, hi, you're here for this? Here's more that you can do. You can register to vote, and I can help you with that. And you can go online and do it. And they're just... Cynthia, do you want
to... Well, I think, you know, one of the things where I can see out there, you know, having been involved with a lot of campaigns, you know, going door to door can be really powerful. You know as well as I do that we don't get enough people out voting.
Oh, yeah.
I see high school kids being unleashed, knocking on doors, you know, for candidates who, you know, endorse gun reform. And knocking on doors and telling people, I need you to go vote. I need you, my next door neighbor, to go vote. I need you know, the lady down the street, I need you to go vote. And I think that'll be very powerful. And you can tell that the kids are kind of tied into that. They know voting is the goal. So, you know, I'm optimistic. I think, you know, once we, you know, settle on, you know, who's running for what offices and where people stand on this, I think that we will unleash a formidable power.
What were you, the two of you, this question goes out to both of you, what were you thinking when Emma Gonzalez was speaking and then she went quiet for what turned out to be the 4 minutes?
We're her biggest fans.
Oh, yes.
We already knew that. About, we are her biggest fans.
Now, I didn't go to Washington, D.C., but I happened to be watching not the entire piece of what was going on, but I watched a large segment of the rally, and I happened to be watching that when she was talking, and when she got quiet, and then it, you know, and for a while, you know, I'm watching it on TV, so I don't know how close you were to a large screen, but I'm watching this, and I can see, okay, she's crying, and so 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 25 seconds, and then I realize she's making a point here for something. But then, it, you know, obviously it goes on for a lengthy time period. So I'm curious what you were thinking.
At first I was like, oh, okay, she's quiet. I hope she's okay. And then as it went on longer, I was like, she's making a point. Same as you. And it was, honestly, it was one of the most amazing speeches I've ever heard. And she didn't say anything for 6 minutes. She didn't. And it was a sense of solidarity, but it also, once there was silence, there was this creation.
It was silent.
It was silent. Like, people, some people tried to start standing, but in my head I was like, oh, stop. Stop, stop, stop. Because this needs to be a quiet moment. And it takes a lot to get 800,000 people to be quiet. And there was this sense of solidarity and further understanding. That's kind of weird how there can be further understanding through silence, because it made the moment, those 6 minutes, feel so much more important and impactful. And it was a time for thought. We weren't just listening to like-minded people making speeches. We were quiet in our own thought, and it brought about this deeper level of understanding of what the goal was, but also the impact and how short it was.
I think, too, if you've ever stood in front of a microphone, you know, you know there's a certain amount of stress in what you say, but not saying anything while you're standing in front of millions of people, either on TV in real life, took such incredible power and backbone and confidence to be able to do that. It brought tears to my eyes. It was really, she is, you know, she bears watching.
Oh, yes.
I think a lot of us laughed at afterwards and said, if her name was on a ballot at this moment, she would win anything. I mean, people were really, you know, this is a young woman who has something to say and the courage to say it.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little bit of time left with our guests, Althea Lawn Worrell and Cynthia Neff, as we talk about the March for Our Lives rally and the overall topic of students and anti-gun violence. How do you keep the topic at or near the top of the news? Because we've gone from February 14th at Parkland with its horrific event, and then the loving scene on March 14th, and then the rally on March 28th, I believe,
24th.
March 24th, and then the conversation shortly after that about what happened, and then it's starting to slowly go down the ladder a little bit. If you ask people today where it ranks in the news conversation. I'm not sure where it is, but it's not near the top. I mean, we have China and tariffs and North Korea and other issues.
Trump.
And, you know, how do you keep the NRA frightened about and concerned about what's happening?
Staying active is one thing. Putting together phone call parties where you all get together before school, after, on the weekends, and calling representatives and saying, hi, my name is, this is where I live, you represent me, this is what I want. And calling our representatives, going out and talking to people, signing up with different organizations, putting together your own rally, your own vigil, anything to keep the conversation moving and to inspire more people for more than a news cycle. And so it's a part of it is that, but also even becoming active in your school groups, you know, joining whatever groups that your school offers, starting it, just finding other people and then trying to get change. That is how you keep them scared. You keep them scared by forcing people to talk about it, by forcing our government to talk about it, by forcing your local government, your state government, by making it so that they can't avoid it. And they can't avoid that by trying to talk to them. Because the only thing that you can really do is if you call, is hang up on you, or if you talk to them face to face, walk away, or if you email them, to not respond to you. But either way, they are getting those messages. And the more people that do that, the scarier the NRA is, and the more likely we are to get change. But part of that is also voting. Voting, getting information, registering people to vote.
I think this fall will be...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think one of the things is keeping the pressure on until then. But once we have a slate of candidates that, and there's a possibility if we get the right people into Congress that we can change gun laws, I think, you know, we'll see this, you know, as the kids are coming back to school in the fall, I think that we'll see this movement pick up steam and become even more powerful then.
Oh, yeah. I definitely agree with that. And when it comes to politicians, when it comes to our people that we have elected into power, it is making sure that they understand that we are paying attention and that we are listening. Paying attention to what your representative does is one of the most important things that you can do because it gives you an understanding of what they actually want. And so a politician only stays in power as long as they get reelected. And as long as we put pressure on them, as long as we focus on them and their actions and what they are doing, the more likely it is for them to do what we actually want them to do instead of just ignoring us.
No, I mean, we don't have elected officials representing us today that support, you know, gun reform. So we have to get some that do. And I think that's the only way we're going to change things.
Exactly.
Have you found through any work that's been done yet, or is this on your list of things to do through some of the issues that you mentioned, through some of the your friends that you mentioned earlier in the hour? There doesn't really seem to be much of a difference between left and right-wing ideologies and getting actual changes. I mean, right-wing ideology might say, we deserve to keep our guns. You know, stop trying to take our guns away. And left-wing ideology might say, we need to make changes and, you know, let's take away the bump stocks. But nothing has actually happened, even when there were the 2 years of the Obama administration had both the House and the Senate and changes could have been made. if attempts were made.
But don't you think, I mean, to me, I think that it's this miasma that we all fell into. I honestly did not think, I had lost any belief that we could change the gun laws, that that was one of those things that was just impossible. The NRA is the best and biggest lobbying organization on the planet. They have more money than anybody, that we just could never do that. It was too, and that even the left wing said, oh, I don't want to take away their rights to own a gun. So I just didn't think it would ever happen. And it was literally standing in Washington, D.C. amidst hundreds of thousands of kids who kept telling me over and over and over again, we're going to change this. And I'll be damned, I believe them.
So my question is, do you remove the people who are there now and put in new people? Because regardless of which side you're on, right or left, nothing has been done for a significant length of time? Or do you pick a side and say, I'm with you because you've been telling me that you'll do something and you just haven't done it, and go forward?
I personally, I think it's that people need to come to an understanding. For me, I don't want to take away people's guns. I understand that some people do need their guns. They need to be able to hunt, and in certain areas, that's understandable. What I want is I want stricter gun laws. I want certain people to not be able to buy a gun. That also includes closing the boyfriend loophole that is in Virginia state law. And it's making it harder for people who shouldn't have guns, aggressors, domestic violence abusers, making it so that they don't have access to it, making it so that random 18-year-olds can't just go and buy a gun. And people need to come to an understanding that there are certain reasonable expectations that we as a nation need to we need to come together on that. And we need to say, okay, we want to stop people from being able to go and shoot up a school or a church or a nightclub. And so it comes down to our politicians talking to each other and going across the aisle and saying, this is what my constituents want. This is what my constituents want. And working together to find a middle ground where we have stricter gun laws than looser ones. And it needs to happen through us as citizens of this country, but it also needs to come from our politicians. And part of that is taking the people who said that they could out of office.
And we're going to finish with that. Althea Long-Laurel, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Cynthia Neff, I appreciate you coming in. Everyone, that's an important topic. I hope you'll continue to watch what the students are doing, because I think they're going to lead us where we need to go. Adios, my friends.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.